The topic of my presentation is global vitamin D deficiency and its role in health and disease. As you know, that vitamin D deficiency is not limited to one country or one location, one region. It is a global epidemic. It's a global phenomenon. So I'll talk about develop an understanding. These are the objectives of my presentation. Develop an understanding of vitamin D. What it is, how we get it, and why we need it. Recall the basics of vitamin D, source, production, and metabolism. Understand the difference between D3 and D2. As you know, there are two important vitamin Ds that we use, that is D3 and D2. So there is a lot of confusion between the two, so I will try to explain the difference. Prevalence of vitamin D deficiency in Abu Dhabi, in the Middle East, and other countries. And the current research on vitamin D and its major physiological actions. Many chemical laboratories in the world, including our own, have seen the request for vitamin D increased by 100% or more. We in our lab have 150% increase in the laboratory tests for vitamin D during the last 5 years. The most common laboratory test to assess vitamin D nutrition is taken is total 25-hydroxyvitamin D. What is vitamin D? Vitamin D is actually a steroidal hormone like estrogen or testosterone. It stands alone as the only vitamin the body can produce on its own. Vitamin D is called sunshine vitamin because the body naturally produces it through exposure of your skin to the sun. When the sun rays coming and interact with the sun, DHC can be produced vitamin D. I will talk a little bit more in the coming slides. What is vitamin D deficiency? Not having enough vitamin D that your body needs to function normally is vitamin D deficiency. And vitamin D deficiency is an epidemic of such magnitude and seriousness that it is not only alarmingly widespread, but also a root cause of many serious diseases such as rickets, osteoporosis, osteopenia, osteomalacia, multiple sclerosis, cancer, cardiovascular disease, tuberculosis, and diabetes. There is one molecule which is very important when we talk about vitamin D, it's called vitamin D receptor. Vitamin D receptor have been found in almost every type of human cell from brain to our bones. And vitamin D controls directly or indirectly more than 3000 genes that regulate calcium, phosphorus, bone metabolism, and modulate innate adaptive immunity, controls cell growth, maturation, regulate production of insulin, and then induce the programmed cell death and inhibit angiogenesis. You can see on the right side the three-dimensional structure of vitamin D receptor. Unfortunately, there is no food which is rich in vitamin D, but there are certain seafoods which have or contain vitamin D, and it is like here, cod liver oil, 1 tablespoon, has 1,365 per serving. Salmon fish is the richest source of vitamin D as far as the food is concerned. Mackerel 2-3 a, tuna fish 154, milk vitamin D 45. Is 115-124 and so on. So the bottom line is that no food that we generally eat is rich in vitamin D. And what is, from where we can get vitamin D? 90% of the vitamin D is coming from the sun, and sun is the key source of vitamin D 3. And this slide is a multi informative. We can get many information from this slide. What clothes that should be used, and how much vitamin D we get, and what kind of rays are coming from the sun. There are three kinds of rays that are coming to us from the sun that are called UVA, UVB, and UVC. UVB are shown here with the blue lines, and UVA with the little yellowish, and UVC are red. But UV are the only rays which are important as far as the vitamin D production is concerned in our body. From the very right hand side, extreme right, if we see the picture, a woman sitting inside the house, fitted with the glass windows, and getting zero vitamin D. Reason is that the UV rays are very sensitive, and they are stopped by the glass windows. So the person sitting inside, of course, getting sunlight, but not the UVB. And they report there is no interaction of UVB with the cell in the SC, and there is a zero production of vitamin D. The next picture is cycling, person cycling, and exposing 45% or 40% of the body and getting 10,000 mU of vitamin D, because the UVB interacting with the skin. On the third picture from the eye is the baby which is without clothes, totally naked, getting the maximum amount of vitamin D, that is 20,000 mU. And on the extreme left, a girl which is covered with the black nose abaya is not getting enough vitamin D, very little amount of vitamin D is produced in the skin because there is no interaction or exposure of the skin to the sun. Sun exposure. How much we should expose to the sun, and when we expose to the sun to get vitamin D? 10 to 20 minutes, not less than 40% of the body surface exposed between 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. and 2 times a day. This is the dose that we should get, and we can get sufficient vitamin D. And ultraviolet B radiation cannot pass through the glass as we have seen in the previous slide. And there is also a great decrease in the production of vitamin D under the conditions. If someone is aging, aged person, they reduce the production of vitamin D because their capacity of producing vitamin D goes down as we age. And at the age of 60 years, 40% of our vitamin D, vitamin D receptors goes down. Dark skin, of course, skin pigmentation is also very important. And the dark skin people, they need 6 to 10 times more exposure to the sun to produce vitamin D than the white skin people. Sunscreen and clothes also one of the factors that also affect vitamin D production. We should not use umbrella or sunscreen. Yeah, this is the idea. I cannot say the ideal situation, but if somebody is sitting on the beach without clothes, and you see how much vitamin D he can get, or one main micrograms dose of ultraviolet radiation will release approximately 10,000 to 25,000 international units of vitamin D into the circulation within 24 hours. And the aggression in individuals may be 6 to 10 times more ultraviolet radiation exposure than the light skin people. This is a very interesting slide. This is consistent but very familiar. It shows all about the metabolism of vitamin D, the source of vitamin D, and how it moves into the different parts of our body. See, it is showing the source is here. We can get vitamin D through capsules or tablets, the fish, salmon fish, or the milk which is fortified with vitamin D. The other source, the key source, is the sun. So, from this source, both types of vitamin D come into our digestive system, that's D3 and D2. And from the sun, it is only D3 which is interacting with the 7-THC here, making free vitamin D and then vitamin D, and then binding to the vitamin D binding protein and going to the circulation. Here, from our digestive system, both types of vitamin D binding to the chylomicrons and moving to the circulation, and then reaching to the first stage where the hydroxylation is taking place in the liver, where the addition of one hydroxy group and converting vitamin D into 25 hydroxy vitamin D, that is 25-OHD. This form of vitamin D is the storage form. And this is the marker of vitamin D, which tells us the status of the person, whether he or she is vitamin D deficient, sufficient, or toxic. And this is always used to measure the vitamin D status of anybody. So this is called the storage format. From here, there are two ways for vitamin D to go in the body. The first is the classical pathway, which is going to the kidney here. And it is hydroxylation is taking place, another step. Second hydroxylation is taking place in the kidney, means there is one additional hydroxyl is added there, and it is forming the active vitamin D, 125 dihydroxy vitamin D. And vitamin D coming from the kidney or from this pathway is involved in calcium hemostasis, muscle health and bone health and neurodevelopment and others. There is another pathway of vitamin D that is called the alternative pathway, paracrine, autocrine pathway. And vitamin D is going to the cells and tissues of the body under the condition when you have sufficient vitamin D, say more than 75 millimoles. Because the first requirement of the body is to have a classical use of vitamin D, which is going to the kidney. But if you have enough vitamin D, then it will go up to the cells and tissues of the body, where it goes to the prostate, skin, lung, breast, colon, macrophage, monocytes, B-lymphocyte, other cells and tissues. And interestingly, these cells and tissues have all the material. They are present there for vitamin D to metabolize in the same way as in the kidney. Means the enzyme, 125 hydroxylase enzyme is present in the cells and tissue, which convert the 25-OHT into the active form of vitamin D, which is coming from cells and tissue. This active form of vitamin D is involved in immunomodulation, gene transcription, cardiovascular disease, and cancer prevention, and so on. And this vitamin D coming from here is creating the interest in the scientific community during the last 10 years, and most of the research is concentrated on this pathway or on this active form of vitamin D. As I said in my previous slide, now I will explain the difference between the two forms of vitamin D, that is D3 and D2. D2 is called artificial vitamin D. It has all the properties as vitamin D3, but it is called artificial because it is isolated from the herbs, a plant that is called Asclepias. It is grown widely in the mountains of Colorado in the US and from the shrubs. And after irradiation of these two, ergosterol is isolated and vitamin D2 is formed, which is an inactive form of vitamin D. But it is used as a supplement. In the middle, you can see the chemical structure and molecular weight. Vitamin D3, which is a natural vitamin D, is coming from the sun. And 90% of our D3 is the source is sun. But also in the supplement, like in food items and milk and cheese and juices, you can find D3. And that D3 is produced from the furry skin of the furry animals like sheep. There is a material isolated from the skin called lanolin. Lanolin is full of fatty acids, cholesterol and amino acids. And after irradiation, vitamin D3 is isolated. Of course, salmon fish also is the source of vitamin D. And this kind of vitamin D also is inactive. These two forms are inactive vitamin D, but they become active when they pass through the kidneys and form the active form of vitamin D. Here the functions of vitamin D: calcium metabolism. Vitamin D enhances calcium absorption in the gut and inner tubes. Cell differentiation, particularly of collagen and epithelium. Immunity, modulates the immune response, innate and adaptive immune responses, and also affect the apoptosis, the program cell death, and production of certain cytokines, and it shifts from TH1 to TH2 type of cytokines. This is the classical and non-classical function. This slide is showing the difference between how the vitamin D is involved in classical and non-classical functions. Classical functions, vitamin D was originally discovered for its ability to prevent childhood bone diseases, which is characterized by softening of the bones and leading to deformity. This picture showing in the middle is there are three children, and the middle one is a normal, and the either side is suffering from the rickets. You can see it is the bowed legs and the broken knees. So they are suffering from the rickets. This is the classical application of vitamin D that is used to treat the rickets. The major physiological function of vitamin D is to make maintain intracellular and extracellular calcium concentration within physiological acceptable range. These are all classical functions. Now we come to the non-classical functions. It is involved in neurological disorders. Multiple sclerosis, cardiovascular disease, hypertension, muscle weakness and pain, autoimmune disease, type 1 and 2, diabetes, inflammatory bowel disease, reduction, or cancer, allergy. This slide shows the picture of Bangladeshi children suffering from rickets and their treatment was suggested for the cord liver body. Here you can see, and sun, as I said, sun is the key source of vitamin D. So, sun rays, sun itself is the best remedy. Why vitamin D has become so important all of a sudden during the last couple of years? There are many reasons for that, because it's involvement in bone health, heart disease, diabetes, psoriasis. With there is a strong proof of these diseases, that is linked, vitamin D is involved in mortality, cancer, immune function, infection, tuberculosis. Like tuberculosis is associated, vitamin D associated with these diseases, and there is emerging and suspected involvement of vitamin D in neurological disorders like Alzheimer, dementia, and so on, and allergy and cell aging. This slide shows the causes and consequences of vitamin D deficiency. On the left side here, you will see what are the causes that can cause vitamin D deficiency, stop the vitamin D levels to go rise in the body, even you are taking vitamin D. The medications and the supplements, anti-seizure drugs, glucocorticoids, and rifampicin, highly active antiviral, antiretroviral treatment, St. John's Wort, or suffering from hepatic failure, renal failure, nephrotic syndrome, obesity, and malabsorption, Crohn's disease. These are all the factors which can cause vitamin D deficiency. And also sunscreen, as I said in this earlier slide, sunscreen, melanin latitude, or latitude, when we say latitude, it is very important that if we are close to the equator, we are supposed to have sufficient levels of vitamin D, but this is not the case. Now we are very close to the equator, not far, as I think this is 24 north degree north, but we are suffering with vitamin D. But it is true to the areas which are really very cold and there is no sun and far from the equator and there is no vitamin sun exposure and there is vitamin D deficiency. Winter season is also affecting vitamin D levels. And now the consequences of the deficiency, as I said, in neurological disorders, Alzheimer's and dementia, multiple sclerosis, schizophrenia, depression, and also in consequences of vitamin D deficiency are infections in tuberculosis and in lung diseases, diabetes and cancer, and rickets and osteoporosis and so on. This slide is in two parts. The first part I have explained to you before, and the lower part is how the vitamin D is affecting the tissues and cells. This involved vitamin D, the active form of vitamin D, after binding to its receptors, involved in the bone diseases, that is skeleton and bone resorption, and or absorption of the calcium in the gut, and also it's suppressing the pH levels and affecting the pancreas, that is secretion and sensitivity, and also it is stimulating the macrophages and monocytes, lymphocytes, and modulating the immune responses. This slide shows that how vitamin D is affecting both limbs of the immunity, that is innate immune responses and adaptive immune responses. It is when there is a antigen there is attack of some foreign antigens, or there is infection of mycobacterium tuberculosis. So the cells which are involved in the infection of macrophages, monocytes, and as a result of infection, there is expression of toll-like receptors on the surface of the cell. Toll-like receptor 2 and 1, these are surface membrane proteins which are sensing the infection. action, and as a result, there is an induction of catalysin, LLP7, and anti-defense. These are the proteins which are anti-bacterial proteins. And vitamin D enhances the production of these proteins inside the cell. As a result, the catalysin or defensin, they lyse the bacteria and kill microbial tuberculosis inside the cell. Here you can see there is a shift from TH1 to TH2 type cytokines. TH1 cytokines are decreasing and TH2 cytokines, that is, means that pro-inflammatory cytokines are decreased and anti-inflammatory cytokines are increased with the help of vitamin D. This is a slide showing the experiments done in vitro in the cultures of mycobacterium tuberculosis in the presence and absence of vitamin D. In the absence of vitamin D, they grow. Yeah, you can see here the red spots which are showing the live bacteria, and here the killing of bacteria. These are in the presence of vitamin D. Here now I'm going to show you a paper recently came from South Africa, I think it's Cape Town, and they studied 370 participants. In recruited for this study, and they divided all these patients into four groups. One is positive for HIV and TB, one is negative for HIV and TB, and one is positive HIV and negative TB, and then positive TB and negative HIV. Okay, so and also they measured the levels of vitamin D seasonal wise monthly. And this is the results here, that in case of MHIV status negative and active TB negative, then the vitamin D level were high, say more than 15 nanomole. In the case of HIV negative and active TB positive, they were less than what they found in the first group. And then HIV positive and TB negative, they were higher than this one. And at the last group, which were positive for both kind of infection, HIV and TB. HIV is a high incidence in South Africa. So here, the lowest here. So that means that if patients suffering from TB, they are prone to vitamin D deficiency. They should be giving vitamin D supplements to raise their vitamin D levels. So the conclusion of this paper is that vitamin D deficiency is highly prevalent among black Africans in Cape Town, and the method they used to measure was LC-MS/MS. And vitamin D deficiency is associated with susceptibility to active TB, both in the presence and absence of HIV infection. This is another very interesting paper which is in press, and they showed that vitamin D is playing a very important role in the patients which are admitted to the surgical intensive care units. And these are the baseline population characteristics: 181 men and 77 women, and then they define the moderate and severe vitamin D, mild vitamin D and normal vitamin D levels. And see here, they show that a very highly significant difference between the two groups of patients. Those who are having moderate and mild vitamin D, they were just, you know, this is showing the length of the stay, and they were having only very short stays, 5.88 versus 13.73 days, which have severe vitamin D deficiency. So in hospitals nowadays there is a problem of shortage of the beds. So this is a very important information, that having the vitamin D levels high can be very helpful for these patients. And also they observed also this slide is showing the cost for the patient within surgical ICU. And also these patients are suffering with ventilated associated pneumonia. Okay, and the patients with moderate and mild vitamin D deficiency, the total expenditure was 31,743. And for the patients with severe vitamin D deficiency was more than $68,000. This is about the mortality. Mortality was not scientifically significant, but there was a big difference between the two populations. And the conclusion of this paper is severe vitamin D deficiency increases ventilatory associated pneumonia incidence, length of stay, and total hospital cost in the surgical intensive care unit patients. Therefore, vitamin D deficiency could be corrected in critically ill SICU patients. This slide is showing the list of illness and the disease that either occur more frequently in people who are vitamin D deficient or that occur less frequently in people on vitamin D supplement regimen. This is about the methodology of vitamin D. I will not go into the details because we have one dedicated session for this for this information. You will get in details. Dr. Lal and Shahar Khan are going to give very important information, interesting one. But we are using, just like tell you that we are using electrochemiluminescence method with the raw phase in our lab. We are just recently shifted from HPLC. These are the reference ranges. This is the issue of controversies and not actually is very well set of issue, and the reference ranges they change from place to place, and one has to have reference ranges to their own population when you are measuring vitamin D. Now I would like to show you the difference between the two forms of vitamin D, that is the active form of vitamin D 125 and the marker which is used for the measurement of vitamin D status of a person. 25 is the main storage form in the human body and is the main vitamin D metabolite circulating in the serum or plasma. And this is the vitamin D, which is 25 approximately 1000 fold greater than the circulating vitamin D. That is active form of vitamin D. And 25 is half life is 2 to 3 weeks, while the active form of vitamin D half life is only 4 to 6 hours. And frequency of vitamin D testing, how frequently we should test vitamin D or order vitamin D testing for a patient. At least once a year, if a patient is on supplement, monitor 25 OSD level approximately every 3 months until results in the optimal range. If the patient is on high doses of 10,000 mg per day, then calcium, phosphorus or PTS levels must be checked every 3 months. This is the slide which I have just taken for your interest, maybe because nowadays our billing system and payment system is through the insurance companies, and it is very important to know this information because this is a very big grant in our day. So we have to be very cautious and informative about this. Like I say, I'm talking about my experience. We have the highest denial rate for vitamin D in our place in Chennai Medical City. And the reason is that we are not using the correct ICD-9 code. And when we talk about the ICD-9, correct ICD-9 code, we should be specific to mention in the chart ticket and also in the seminar that we are ordering vitamin D. And we should justify our ordering test. We should give the symptoms and signs of the disease. And these are the right codes which we selected, and these codes are paid by insurance companies, like in the US Medicare and Medicaid, and we have them here. So say 285 585.3 is chronic kidney disease, is stage 3, is paid. All these ICD-9 codes are paid. And these are all related to the bone and bone-related diseases. But here you see very early surgery status. Of course, the patient, those who are follow-up for after pediatric surgery, they need to know vitamin D status. Vitamin D also is paid by the insurance companies here. This is the how much time I have to learn?
Almost 5 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. This slide is showing the status of vitamin D, how the vitamin D sales has risen but have risen dramatically. In 2008, it was 40 billion, 2005, 50 billion, and 2009, it's 425 million. This is the status of vitamin D in the Middle East. 80% of adolescent girls in Saudi Arabia were found and it was reported. 81% Middle East post-menopausal women tested and reported. And 82% UAE infants were found with vitamin D deficient, reported. 90% UAE population tested vitamin D deficient. It is our group that reported in 2009. 90%, more than 90% of UAE students of Bharat were found vitamin D deficient. We also published this one, and 60%, 68% Qatari students were deficient in vitamin D. This is just published this year. This is our result that in vitamin D status of 68% of Zaire University students were less than 25, 26%, 25-49, and 5% 50-75, only 1% were found in the sufficient levels. Okay, the only difference with other observations around the world and what we observed is that is 25 OSC level was found in summer is greater than what is in the West or in the European countries or North America. That here, in summer, we have lower levels of vitamin D, and in winter we have higher levels. Okay, you can see 20.9, and this is 31.3, this is highly significant. This, I will skip this one. So I will go, why the problem is so high in the Middle East? Very hot climate, lifestyle, decrease outdoor activity, skin color, pollution, transport, clothing that is using abaya and burqa, lack of authorities, regulation for vitamin D, fortification of food and drinks, prolonged breastfeeding without vitamin D supplementation, lack of population-based studies. I will skip this one as well, and this is, I'm just coming very close to finish. This is a study which is recently published, and very interesting one thing, the question always when I give the talk of vitamin D, who adjusts the level of 115 or 120 for us to have vitamin D levels 120 and the whole. There are many studies before, but this is the latest study in addition, that this study shows that two kinds of populations in East Africa, that is in Kenya and Tanzania, that is the Maasai and the Hazabe. They are living in jungles with very little growth on the body, and their levels, both types, the levels were found 115, and these people were free from cardiovascular disease, and they are very, very strong muscles, and they don't have chronic diseases. So, based on that, we should have these levels. But there is a debate that whether these levels will be applicable to the urban population like us, those who are not living in jungles. So anyway, this needs more study. Okay? And these are the two populations. Here you can see here. These are the Maasai Zemban tribe and these are the Hazabe tribe. They are living in jungles, very little growth on the body, but they have very strong muscles and no chronic disease. Need to add vitamin D for each of the following reasons. When we age, as I said before, as we age, our capacity to produce vitamin D goes down. Latitude, if we are far away from the equator, we have to add vitamin D. Season, winter season, here, but we are in summer, we are friendlier. BMI, if you are obese, bioavailability of the vitamin D is less if you are obese. So, we need skin color. If you are dark skin color, you need more. And if you are avoiding sun. Okay, is vitamin D toxic? I'm just close to my talk. Exposure to sunlight does not lead to overproduction of vitamin D. Supplemental vitamin D in certain clinical settings may have toxicity. No case of hypercalcemia with doses less than 10,000 IU daily have been reported. And symptoms are largely hypercalcemia, high blood pressure, headache, fatigue, loss of appetite, and so on. And group like this, infants, elderly, dark skin, covered women with a burqa, kidney failure, patients with chronic liver disease, fat melatonin, or genetic type certificate, patients with anticonvulsant, so on. This is just a slide showing the sources of information about vitamin D when there was survey was conducted, and the patients were asked questionnaire. They showed about vitamin D information they got from family and friends. Highest, and then the doctors and hospital staff, radio, TV, yes, and leaflet, and community centers, the schools, yes, and internet, university, newspapers, and cancer. Very little. Now, the situation is to of promoting awareness, leaflets. The highest and the verbal information, yes, notice board, and advertisement of TB vaccine, and doctors, and so on. Okay, now the take home messages. Since we are experiencing global epidemic of vitamin D insufficiency, deficiency, it is imperative that all individuals be encouraged to obtain vitamin D from higher sunlight or supplementation or through fortification. All these groups require optimal levels of vitamin D to support physiological functions that are dependent on circulating vitamin D. Public education awareness should be provided about the safety of vitamin D supplementation and the value of sensible sunlight exposure. When we say sensible, we have to be careful. We should not just stand in front of the sun opening our eyes, we can get damaged to the eyes. So sensible sun exposure. There is a growing consensus that the optimal range of vitamin D values lies about 30 to 30 nanograms, that is 75 to 80 nanomole per liter for most populations. Vitamin D is truly remarkable in that it plays a key role in a wide range of physiological functions. And acknowledgement, Dr. Lala Abdulbari, very supportive. Highly encouraging all the time. Without the support, it's not possible for me to carry out this research, and she's the one who made me initiate the vitamin D research at NCHC. Dr. Jayesh Raja, who is a pediatric consultant in our hospital, we have a collaborative project with him on the case and on some other topics related to vitamin D deficiency. Dr. Fatima Alamuti, who is also a speaker of this conference in the afternoon session, and we are collaborating with her with the students as far as the vitamin D status and students is concerned. Professor William Grant from San Francisco, who is here, and Mr. Lafis Nimer, who is working with us. And thank you very much for your time and attention.
Without any delay, please, Professor Grant.